This morning on The Long View, our political analyst Neil Milner takes a closer look at the general election results, in particular the breakdown for the parties. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Catherine.
So, yeah, we were hearing a lot about the blue wall and the red wall.
Well, yeah, there's a lot we don't know yet, but we know a fair amount about how vote was county by county, and that tells us a whole lot. And some of the important things that it tells us is that the urban, suburban, rural divide is even bigger. That there is that in the Clinton election in 2016, it was already clear that small towns and urban and rural areas went even more Republican than they had in the past, and other places got even maybe slightly more Democratic. What you have in this election is that of all the kinds of categories, big cities, urban cores, suburbs, and so on, the only area that went more Republican in 2020 for presidency than the last one was rural. So you have that kind of difference that has increased. Suburbs actually drove the election a little bit more, and we'll get back to that in a second, because that has something to do with diversity and prosperity. So that's one thing that we know. The other thing we know, and it's, of course, related to the urban and rural thing, the counties that went for Biden produced 70% of the gross domestic product in the country. In other words, over two-thirds of the stuff produced, domestic product, is produced in those places, and it's not hard to imagine what they are. And that's an increase over last time. So now there's even a bigger difference between, let's say, prosperity in the urban areas. And almost every city that that is a high producer is now a Democratic city, or was this time, including a city like Phoenix, which used to be pretty Republican. So you put those two things together, and you see that there is something here about very big differences in prosperity, very big differences in urban versus rural. And there's one more thing to put into this mix, and that is that suburbs became more Democratic this time, and may have been a very important factor. But it's a certain kind of suburb that, in fact, is a lot more like these high-producing gross domestic product places. One of them is a suburb of Atlanta, for example, that used to be kind of rural or small town, 65% white, is now very diverse, only about 30-some percent white. They became Democratic. It's a prosperous place. It's a suburb of Atlanta. So you got all those things. That's the kind of picture. And what you have to do, and we'll talk about this in a second, imagine those places in your head and what differences they are, and that's really what we're starting to see.
You know, during the campaign, I remember the speech that President Trump, you know, made about, you know, I need a suburban woman to like me.
Yeah. Well, he was talking about June Cleaver. Basically, he was talking about a kind of a suburb that is not at all typical anymore. Suburbs used to be predominantly white, middle class, kind of upper middle class, certainly homogeneous. Now suburbs are much more diverse, both economically and otherwise. And so the appeal that had, essentially it was an appeal that said white people watch out because black people are moving in and they're going to cause problems, which frankly used to be a driving force in suburbs. That's not the case anymore because a lot of suburbs are more racially diverse, like the one I described a minute ago. So he tried to reinstate a vision that no longer exists.
Now, I know in some of the research that you were looking at, they talked about, you know, the proximity to a Whole Foods store or a Lululemon store.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, what's going on here, and that's one of the significant things to understand about all of this. This is another example of the increase in polarization, because polarization, it's not simply polarization by party. It's polarization by the kind of place you live in, urban versus rural, for example, diverse inner suburbs versus small towns and so on. But there are clear lifestyle differences. Let's call it social polarization that reinforces political polarization. And the Whole Foods stuff, hey, by the way, you live closer to Whole Foods than I do. So, but the Whole Foods polarization is that if you live close to Whole Foods, you're more likely to vote Democratic than if you don't live close to Whole Foods. So that may seem trivial, but it's not trivial at all, because what you have here is another example of the reinforcements of the kind of divides that we're talking about here and the stubbornness of polarization. And it gets reflected in the kinds of interest in certain kinds of policies that Democrats and Republicans have.
So you've got this economic rift, I guess, then.
Yeah.
That we've clearly seen based on the vote. But you know, how does that bode for working our differences out?
It doesn't bode well, because the parties, the more polarized the sources of support are, the more parties have different interests. If you're from an urban area that's relatively prosperous, take an exaggerated example like San Francisco, for example. It doesn't have to be any city. You're going to be more interested in affordable housing, infrastructure, transportation. That's not the interest in rural areas. Rural areas are really suffering in very different sorts of ways. They're not really, it's not so much getting to work, it's having work at all. And you combine that with the kind of resentment that's there in these rural areas that political life has really passed them by, and you see how hard it's going to be. So that's a real challenge for President Biden, not to mention the fact that the Democrats are really very much divided on some of these same issues, how much you emphasize urban, kind of urban, people of color issues, and how much you don't. So in case you didn't think there was enough on Biden's plate going ahead, this is an indication that there will be a lot more.
Now, I know there was a lot of talk early on that a lot of the immigrant vote would go toward Biden, but that didn't really play out in Florida.
Well, it didn't play. It played well, yes. The thing about immigrant votes is that there is a big surprise. There are subsets of immigrants that think differently. Trump did very well in certain sections of Florida that tend to be more Cuban-American, who tend to be more sympathetic toward Trump. Did well there. They tend to be more sympathetic toward Republicans anyway. It's an interesting example of what Latinx vote really turned out here, because in some areas on the South Texas border, for example, there was an increase in votes of Hispanics, because a lot of Hispanics are, it's not, a lot of them believe in some of the same economic policies. But if you want to understand this, you look at another part of Texas, which is Tennant County, where Fort Worth is, used to be the most reliable Republican county in the state of Texas. And that same something, it's not, it voted Democratic this time. And if you ride 200 miles one way or maybe 300 miles the other way, you don't come across another Democratic county for that distance of time, because it's all rural. So Texas is an interesting example of you seeing all these different kinds of dynamics. But the overall thing is that there's a lot of little differences that we don't understand very much yet, but these broader ones about the difference between urban and rural are pretty clear.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the parties make use of this information during the next election.
Yeah, interesting may not be the word that you want to use after a couple of years of this, but we'll see.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks so much, Neil.
Sure.
Neil Milner is a retired professor of political science at UH Manoa, and he joins us regularly with his thoughts on the long view.